Theophilus Tanner was, like Mildred, one of the few people in the Deathlands with any first-hand knowledge of the world before Skydark. Lying on the chamber floor with his frock coat wrapped around him and his white mane obscuring his features, Doc could be mistaken, on glimpsing his weathered and lined features, for a man in his 60s. Yet he was only in his late 30s. Doc had been the subject of an experiment by Operation Kronos, a part of the Totality concept, a U.S. government project that had been partly responsible for the war that led to the devastation of Skydark, and had bequeathed the redoubts and the Mattrans units to those who came after. Doc had been born in the mid-19th century in rural Vermont, and was a doctor of science and philosophy. A happily married man, he'd been snatched away from his beloved wife Emily and his children, Rachel and Joljan, by a random time trawl operated by the white coat scientists of Operation Kronos. He had fought and struggled with his captors, both mentally and physically. Doc had become a problem, and the solution was to send him forward in time. Tanner had been shot 100 years into the future, ironically saving him from the fate that soon caught up with his tormentors, but leaving him adrift in a world completely unlike anything he could ever have imagined. Doc's physical frame showed the obvious signs of the stresses of time travel, but it was his mind that was much more of a concern. In flashes, the old scholar was erudite and sharp, but at other times he was in a different world, and his grasp on reality could be dangerously thin, the silken thread of his psyche perilously close to snapping.
Are you gonna make it, Doc?
How long, O Lord? Will you forget me forever? How long will you hide your face from me?
Doc?
Mildred felt his pulse fading in and out, as though he were actually close to just fading away in front of her.
How many more of these jumps can you take, old man?
Mayhap 3 or 4 more.
Don't say that, Doc.
I merely jest, dear Doctor. I merely jest.
You better be.
I must assume that we have arrived safely once more. Oh, perhaps we should stick around, see what is happening.
Ryan looked at Christy. The ends of her hair were wispy tendrils that began to flutter, as though from the slightest breeze. There was no movement in the air. Her green eyes caught his and fixed them with an intense stare.
Can't really tell for sure. No, I'm not reading anything. This just feels wrong. A gut instinct.
Huh.
The one-eyed man nodded crisply. He trusted Christie's almost doomy-like feelings, and particularly her unique early warning system.
Triple red, people.
Ryan inclined his head to JB. The armorer nodded in return, moving toward the back of the group. They would follow their usual formation, Ryan in the front, followed by Christy and Jack. Doc, as the most immediately vulnerable, would be kept in the middle, followed by Dean and Mildred. JB brought up the rear, and was skilled in the art of keeping their asses covered. Nothing ever got past the man. Ryan opened the door and stood back. Exiting a chamber into an unknown environment could always be a risk. Ryan kept his breathing controlled, allowing him to better detect any noises that might come from outside the chamber. His eye flickered across the narrow scope of fire afforded by the door. He could hear or see nothing. Turning his head, he could see Christy. Her sentient hair hadn't moved, and her steady gaze told him of no danger. He raised an eyebrow as he looked at Jack. The albino hunter was also breathing shallowly, his every sense concentrated on detecting signs of life. He shook his head almost imperceptibly. Ryan, satisfied that there was little danger, but still prepared for any action, tensed his steel-coiled muscles and eased through the door. He had the stire up and searching, but the area appeared to be clean.
It's looking clear. Let's move on, people.
The companions left the chamber and filed through the anteroom and into the comp control room.
No signs of life in here, but what about outside, babe?
There's something, but I can't tell what. We need to keep it triple red, though.
JB and Jack both looked up at the ceiling.
Set cameras?
Uh-huh. Never know.
As they both looked around, they could see the old vid cameras, but noticed that the winking red lights that usually indicated a working camera were extinguished.
That's good. No one's gonna be expecting us.
I wouldn't bet on that.
Why, Dean?
The youth had wandered near the exit door to the unit, hunkered down, and started examining something on the floor.
Take a look at this.
Dean picked up an object off the floor and carried it over to the rest of the group.
A self-heat.
Most redoubts had large supplies of these vacuum-packed foods, sealed so that unwrapping them triggered a reaction in the packaging that heated the food within. They usually tasted terrible, but were always good for their nutritional and energy value. During their time together, the companions had become all too familiar with the self-heats.
More than just that. Take a look at it. A close look.
Why, let us see what has piqued the lad's interest.
Doc leaned forward, squinting as he tried to focus on the crumpled package. He extended a finger and prodded delicately at it. He then withdrew his hand and rubbed at his fingertip with his other hand.
Now that is indeed interesting. I would not say that it was as recent as today or yesterday, but the remains of that self-heat are quite dry, with the slightest residue of moisture. It is quite enough to put it in these hermetic conditions as recently as a week since its use.
Company, then. They may not be around now, but they aren't going to be far away. Form up and we'll move out. Hopefully they'll have scavenged and then gone, leaving us with at least the chance to take a shower, maybe some fresh clothes, and grab some sleep.
When was the last time we got that lucky?
Okay, people, you know the drill.
Everyone fell into line behind him. Ryan punched in the 357 sec code. The others readied themselves for action at any second. But the corridor beyond the door was empty. Ryan stepped out, covering both sides with the Sig Sauer. He could see nothing along the 100-yard corridor in each direction, one end terminating in an elevator, the other in a gently curving bend. He moved into a defensive position behind one of the concrete support pillars that helped to shore up the redoubt's deep earthworks against the vast pressure of the earth above that bore down on the honeycombed structure.
Seems quiet. Reckon we'll be better off taking the tunnel and working our way up rather than try the elevator. Safer.
Yeah, if there's anyone around, they'll soon be onto us if they hear that contraption creaking into action. At least this way we can keep quiet.
Stay close on triple red, people.
They walked carefully along the corridor, rounding the bend in a formation that hugged the wall to keep as much cover as possible. As they did so, they all noticed the unearthly quiet of the redoubt.
Something's not right. Look at this.
Ryan indicated a part of the wall that seemed to have been recently and clumsily repaired. It was a large irregular circle and seemed to have been filled in, but then not finished properly. There was also an old girder salvaged from some other part of the redoubt, used farther along their route to shore up yet another section of the wall. On the floor, surrounding the rough work, were signs of recent habitation. A water canteen left behind, some self-heats, and a pool of congealed oil that hadn't yet fully soaked into the concrete floor.
Gotta be some people around to have done this, and fairly recently. So where are they?